Namotasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namotasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namotasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So today we are doing this Anguttara Nikaya, that is the Book of Eight, that is under the Householder and Sutras 29, this inopportune moments. The reason why I chose these sutras, because sometimes the reason we read sutras is not just read and just maybe it sounds profound, maybe it sounds good. But one of the reasons that to help us when we read suttas, we read the Buddha's teaching, that's really inspire us. We do need the inspiration to keep us going, to strive. That is very important because in one of the spiritual faculties, the first one, faith, actually is a very important factor that really helps us to arouse energy, to strive. We need that inspiration because after a while, you know, we tend to forget. And this is how we need the inspiration to keep us going. So sometimes it's good. Why we read these suttas? It's not that it's just, you know, so that we're so good at it and we can tell people that I know this sutta, that suttas, you know, and good at arguing. But that's not the point. We read the suttas, actually sometimes it's really helped me. For example, like myself, when I start to teach, I got to read these suttas. So actually, I gain tremendous benefit from that because sometimes really make me reflect. Sometimes we tend to take things for granted, isn't it? We just, you know, and really make me reflect, you know. Do I have that quality? Am I doing that, you know? Like some of the things that the Buddha said you shouldn't do or some of the qualities that you should develop. Then when you read that, we ask ourselves. We not only just read, when we read, we reflect in line with our own life, with our practice. See, am I doing that? Do I have that qualities? We investigate, we contemplate. Then maybe we know for ourselves, okay, yes, I'm still not, you know, I'm still lack of this quality. So this is something that, you know, I need to develop. That's right. And also it's important that these suttas actually, when we read these suttas, especially this one, it really helped us to arouse that gratitude, you know, to have this gratitude, appreciations. We do not take things for granted because so easily we just take things for granted. So, and I just read and you can just stop me whenever you know. So Pikus. The uninstructed whirling said, "The world has gained the opportunities. The world has gained the opportunities, but he does not know what is an opportunity and what is not an opportunity. They are because these eight inopportune moments that are not right occasions for living the spiritual life. What eight?" So the Buddha said, you know, sometimes we don't really know what is really so-called opportunities. Maybe to in the world, we think the opportunities that we can earn lots of money, you know, gain some material well-being, that is opportunities, you know. Maybe we can gain fame, that is the opportunities, you know. This is how in the world, isn't it? This is what they think, that, you know, got the opportunities to get a good job and to be famous and to get more material well-being. So the Buddha said, there are eight inopportune moments. There's that there is like, you don't, inopportune moment, that means if you have that, you don't, like, this inopportune moments, that means that you reborn in that time. You see, if you're in that time, even you have no opportunities to practice. This is what I mean for living the spiritual life. So what are these eight that inopportune moment? The Buddha said, here, Tathagata has arisen in the world. An arahant, perfectly enlightened, accomplished in true knowledge and conduct, fortunate knower of the world, unsurpassed trainer of persons to be tame, teachers of devas and humans, an enlightened one, a blessed one, and the Dhamma leading to peace, Nibbana, and enlightenment is taught as proclaimed by a fortunate one. But a person has been reborn in hell. This is the first inopportune moment that is not right occasions for living the spiritual life. So, yes, if you're reborn in hell, it's so much suffering, isn't it? Definitely we cannot practice the Dhamma and don't have the condition that we need to keep the precepts, you know, to be able to, you know, sometimes people take it for granted, you know. You have the opportunities to keep the precepts, you know. And we think that we just take it for granted that we have, you know, very intelligent and also in the hell is a lot of suffering. And you don't have the opportunities if reborn in hell. So then the second one, the Buddha continued to say, again, a Tathagata has arisen in the world and the Dhamma leading to peace, Nibbana, and enlightenment is taught as proclaimed by a fortunate one. But a person has been reborn in the animal realm. This is the second inopportune moment that is not the right occasions for living spiritual life. So if we're born as an animal, that's for sure, like, you know, you cannot practice the Dhamma, you don't understand the Dhamma. Like sometimes, sometimes ago, someone said, like some people that think that, oh, I'm just only offer dana is good enough. But if you don't keep your precepts, so that's why maybe you can reborn as a good a karma dog that you have lost. But being a dog, because you didn't keep your precept, you know. That's why sometimes we always laugh that like we have a cat. So our cat is really, you know, we said that she's such a good karma being born in a monastery, but she didn't keep her precept, so she born as a cat. So we said, be careful, you know. Then, you know, just offer lots of dana. So you got lots of merits, but if you don't keep the precept, you know, then you reborn in a animal realm, but a good karma animal, you know, got lots of, you know, not worry with the food and, you know, being loved. And but that's why it's so important to keep in the precepts, you know. It's, we do not take it for granted. That's, and then Buddha went on and said, again, a Tathagata has arisen in the world, and the Dhamma leading to peace, Nibbana, and enlightenment is taught, programmed by fortunate one. But a person has been reborn in sphere afflicted spirits. This is the third inopportune moment that is not the right occasion for living the spiritual life. That is, you reborn in like the hungry ghost, the ghost realm, the spirit realms. So that also that realm that is also a loss of suffering. You see, you when you cannot practice, you cannot live the spiritual life. Like the hungry girls, like Peta, you know, and those, and also the it's also come from you born in that spirit's realm. Sometimes it's also because of the attachment. That's why we practice, you know. Sometimes why some people, you know, and they've been practicing, and then the last moment they couldn't let go. But depends if some people have done lots of good deeds, you know. Only that moment that attach and they're reborn in the spirit realm, sometimes it's quite short. Depends on how strong the attachment. You know, some, you know, after that they got a good rebirth. So like I think there's one of the very famous one, Ahsoka. There is I don't know how many of you know the story of Ahsoka's So he's been a great king, isn't it? He's the one who really helped propagate the Dharma, you know. He's a Buddhist. And when he passed, the moment he passed away because he was sick, and he was in pain, and the maid, the servant, fanned him, and because he was in pain, he's poked his hand, and he was a bit upset, you know. That moment, he was a bit upset, angry, and then he reborn in as a serpent. Then, but that time, the son Mahinda, he got a son and a daughter. I think it's a very famous. The daughter is Sankamita, and then the son is Mahinda. So, and he knew that his father is born as a serpent, and he searched for him and went to talk to him, and telling him that all the good things that he has done. And yeah, and then when he lived only 7 days, and after that he reborn in a devil realm, you know. So this is sometimes the attachment. But as you can see, like those, a certain death normally is more attachment because it's really in the shock. You know, you're not prepared, you're not really, you know, that you don't know that you're going to die, you know. It's just like accidents, it's come in all the sudden death, and that moment you just couldn't let go. But usually when people have lots of illness, sickness, that's why we look in a positive way when we've been diagnosed with, you know, a terminal illness, you know. So we still have a bit of time to prepare, to look at it, you know, to really, because anyway, all of us cannot escape. There is one day to come. Depends on when it is coming, isn't it? It's sudden. You know, life is uncertain, but death is certain. We're going to face it. No one can live forever one day. So then we have, that is, sometimes we look at it, it's still not a bad thing because it's a wake-up call for us to look at it, you know. You just look at the life, look at it. You know, we are not, you know, we can die, we will reflect on that, isn't it? We won't take it for granted and we wake up. This is a wake-up call. It's not a bad thing, rather than, you know, certain death, and that moment you can't let go. Like some people, when they keep practicing, and then when they're sick, and they really can, through their own experience, they see, yeah, you see, this is the Dhamma, this is the truth, and this is the body. We cannot control it's getting sick, getting old, isn't it? Then you easily, you tend to let go easier, you know, then because we reflect, you know, in line with our own experience. Look at this body, how much suffering. Then it's easy to let go. So, and I have seen many, you know, those having sick for a long time. They, when they pass away, they tend to be really more peaceful because they have enough. You know, there was one of the famous stories, like, why people can't let go? And then one of the Zen master, you know, they went to the Zen master, they said, oh, you know, why? I wanted to let go, but I find it very difficult to let go. So the Zen master pour some hot water in the cup and give it to him, and ask him to hold on the really boiling hot water, you know, the cup, you know. And he's really hot. He's just let it go. He said, because you don't have enough suffering, that's why we don't let go. The reason why we can't let go because we don't suffer enough. So when we suffer enough, we let go, we have enough. You really have enough. When you come to a point, the body is so much pain, you have enough. Then you're ready to go, you let go. Then it's really peaceful. So they say, be careful not to really attach so much, to be reborn in the spirit realm, because you couldn't let go. Okay, that is the third one. Then again, the Buddha said, he said, yes, again, a Tathagata has arisen in the world, and the Dharma leading to peace, Nibbana, and enlightenment is taught as programmed by a fortunate one. But a person has been reborn in a certain order of long-lived devas. This is the fourth inopportune moments that is not the right occasions for living the spiritual life. This is a certain realm of the five material heavenly beings. They are unconscious. So it's only the particular one.
So they are unconscious. So because they're unconscious, so they couldn't hear, they couldn't listen to the Dhamma. Like, it's other realm of the heavenly realm, the devas, they be able to listen to the Dhammas, they rejoice, you know. And but this particular realm, they are unconscious, so that they can't, they cannot be able to listen. So if you born even as a deva, if in that particular deva realm, you also don't have the opportunities to practice the spiritual life, living the spiritual life to practice the Dhamma. So any questions about that? So, and then again, and he went on to say that the Buddha said again, Tathagata has arisen in the world, and the Dhamma leading to peace, Nibbana, and enlightenment is taught as programmed by the Fortunate One. But a person has been reborn in the outlying province amongst the uncouched foreigners, a place to which bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, male lay followers, and female lay followers do not travel. This is the fifth inopportune moment that is not the right occasion for living the spiritual life. Like, you are reborn in those, like, you know, those in the removed jungle, and like those, like, more like the native, you know. And you don't have the opportunities, because it's normally monks and nuns or lay follower, you know, men or women, lay follower won't go to those places because it's difficult, because of the accessibility. So then it's difficult to have the chance, to have the opportunities to practice the Dhamma. So then the Buddhas went on to say, again, a Tathagata has arisen in the world, and the Dhamma leading to peace, Nibbana, and enlightenment is taught as programmed by a Fortunate One. A person has reborn in the center province, but he holds wrong view and has distorted perspective. There is nothing given, nothing sacrificed, nothing offered. There is no fruits of results of good and bad actions. There is no this world, no other world. There is no mother, no father. There are no beings spontaneously reborn. There are in the world no ascetics and Brahmins of right conduct and right practice who have realized this world and the other world for themselves by direct knowledge. Make them known to others. This is the sixth inopportune moment that is not right occasions for living spiritual life. Like some, like there is one in this Brahmajala Suttas. This is one of the we call it the wrong fixed view, have very strong. Even during the Buddha's times, some they don't listen to the Buddha's teaching. Even the Buddha is right in front of them because they have very strong a wrong fixed view. That is, they do not believe in karma. And they do not believe that, you know, that is the law of karma. If you do unwholesome deeds and you bear fruit, says no. And that is no next life. That is annihilation. So they do not believe that. They hold the view. That's why I remember some years ago, we've been discussing about like working with the defilements and things like that. And actually, even an angry person, you know, even you have a very strong defilements, but if you don't have the view, some people have very strong fixed will. And if you practice, you still have the opportunities to enlighten, isn't it? Like Angulimala is a very good example. Because even though he's a killer, he's a severe killer, Angulimala, but he's got enlightened. That he's the one he's chasing after the Buddha, and then he want to kill the Buddha, and he's chasing the Buddha. The Buddha, actually, he keeps chasing, he couldn't reach the Buddha. He asked the Buddha, stop. The Buddha said, I already stopped, but you haven't stopped.
So then he become the Buddha disciples and he's become the monk and he enlightened. So that's why if we don't have defilements, we are not here, isn't it? Because we have defilements, that's why we are here. So that's why actually holding these fixed wrong views actually is really worse than a killer. You know what I mean? A killer still have the opportunities to practice, to realize that wisdom. But you're holding that fixed wrong view because that they couldn't, because you're holding that, you know, anything can't go in. You know, the mind is just fixed. So it's worse than a killer if you've been, been reborn, you know, as someone, you know, have holding this fixed view. That's why it's good sometimes that we have to remind ourselves, you know. So we leave it open, not to hold on to our views so tight and so strongly, you know. So yes, if it's disagree with others' views and opinions, it's okay. We can say, okay, I disagree with you. But sometimes we attach to the views and opinions of ours to the point that we get so upset, isn't it? So angry. And we couldn't let it go. Because this is who we are. Because we identify the view and opinion as me and mine. And that is really deluded. The holding on the views, the attachment to views and opinions. So even the Buddha in front of you, you know, if you're holding on to that strong view, you couldn't listen. You will not accept. You will not practice the Dhamma. Because the mind is really full. You just can't go in. And with the really fixed wrong view. There's like, it's good that we leave things open and it's okay. And we sometimes investigate. So not jump into conclusions that, oh, I'm definitely right. You know, it's okay. So if we just acknowledge that, if we discover that, yes, maybe my view is not really, you know. We take a look at it, you know, and be open, not to strongly holding to our views and opinions. And that is also helping us to let go the sense of self. Because the view and opinions are so, we take it as me and mine, isn't it? Like, for example, if someone agree with us, we really like that person much more, isn't it? If someone disagree with us, they don't like that person. Just because we the person reinforce our defilements. Because it has the same view. Then we reinforce, you know, then we like the person when the person agree with us. If we dislike the person because the person disagree with us. And again, it's compared to the sense of self, the ego. Because the person agree with us is again, you know, reaffirm our views and opinions. So that's why it's, if we have that strong view, and then also this is an inopportune moment that is not the right occasions for living the spiritual life. So we have a great teacher in front of us, we have the Buddha in front of us, we still will not be able to have to practice the Dhamma, to listen to the Dhamma, and to live to take up the whole path of practice. So then again, come to the seven. Again, Tathagata has a reason in the world, and the Dhamma leading to peace, Nibbana, and enlightenment is taught as programmed by a fortunate one. A person has been reborn in the central province, but he is unwise, stupid, obtuse, unable to understand the meaning of what has been well stated and badly stated. This is the seventh inopportune moment that is not the right occasion to live the spiritual life. That means if someone born like mentally retarded, like you're less intelligent, like less than normal intelligent, like, you know, like a bit you know, mentally retarded, you'll not be able to understand the Dharma, isn't it? You'll not be able to really, you know, to make sense, you know, to understand. Even you try to teach them, they can't, because they are not like a normal intelligent person to be able really understand, because of them mentally retarded. So you don't have the opportunities. If you reborn being someone that mentally retarded, you don't have the opportunities to practice. Yeah. This is really come from the point, like if you are reborn in that time, even though you have the teachers, you have the teachers, you know, you'll not be able to practice because of you don't have that normal intelligence to understand the Dhamma. This is pointed to like we got, if we reborn in that particular, you know, that time as someone that, you know, mentally retarded, so you'll not be able to understand the Dhamma. You have no opportunities.
Yeah, I was just referring to, it says here, well stated and badly stated. So if you don't know if the Dharma is well stated and badly stated, then you wouldn't understand.
Yeah, that's why he don't have the normal intelligence to discriminate. Like for us, sometimes, you know, some teacher are not teaching. For example, recently someone said to me, and someone said that to this person, he said, oh, you have been practicing loving kindness really wrong. This is not how you practice loving kindness. If you practice loving kindness to all beings, because some of the beings are in a lower realm, and that you suck up their bad energy, and this is your loving kindness you should give to the higher realm, to the upper beings, you know, because they have better energy. So, and this person said, but some people believe this person, follow this person. But if you don't have the intelligence, you really listen to them, you know? Like, that's why, because you do not know how to discriminate, isn't it? And day before yesterday, we talked about that. And amazing, like, this person, have people really follow him and believe him? Believe what he said and really listen to him, you know, telling. For example, like he was said that, you know, you offer dana, you go to particular place, you go to that place, that is the monk highly attained, you should offer dana to them, you got more merits. Like there's sort of things, you know what I mean? Like you discriminate. We offer, you know, dana to dana, the Buddha said, you know, to the whole Sangha, bhikkhu, bhikkhuni, you know. That's why this is the reason why we have one of the rules, particular rules, as a monastic, we don't talk about our attainments, you know, you don't talk about your, you don't tell the lay people, because if not the lay people, oh, this monk is good, everybody, you know. Then when you come to the monastery, you don't know who is more enlightened. Maybe the most, you know, junior one, they are the one who are enlightened, you don't know. So that is how, this is one of the reasons. And we don't discriminate, we offer to the whole Sangha, but not to offer only those who have higher attainment, a better monk. And that is, I said, this is not Dharma. We and then loving kindness, what is true loving kindness? The Buddha said that loving kindness, even the person, you know, torture you, you know, even you've been tortured by the torturer, if you have a moment of ill will towards the torturer, you are not my disciples, you are not practice loving kindness. Even someone torture you, that's the loving kindness really means that you melt you know, melting the barrier between ourselves and others. There's no separation, there is no discrimination. You open up yourself, you open up to others. That is true loving kindness. You know, no, it's just another being. So you can't choose this is better or, you know, you know, discrimination. So that's why if someone like that, you know, if someone don't have that, you know, you when you follow a wrong teacher, that's why that is a karma for that, you know, because this person might have done something in the previous life, the karma as such to associate with someone teaching the wrong dharma. But we are fortunate now, we still have a true dharma exists. So that's why when we are like less intelligent and also we don't meet a good teacher, then we will not be able to really understand. But sometimes and the if we do lots of good, that's why it's important that we practice and also associate with the wise is really important, you know, and to really put into practice so that, you know, we keep going and so that we are unable to enlighten this life, at least we hopefully next life, you know, still be able to continue, you know. That's why sometimes if we stop others from practicing, it's also not out, you know. So if you stop others from practicing, but it's the karma is very complex. It's not like directly, you know. Sometimes we don't know what we have done in the previous life. That's why we associate with a wrong teacher. But sometimes if we have the intelligence, that's why develop the wisdom, you know, is really important. When we have the wisdom, we have the clarity of mind. So that's why it's no problem. Now we have the true Dharma. If we keep practicing and we develop the wisdom and we have more clarity, so we'll be able to discriminate what is right and what is wrong. What is the true Dharma, what is not the true Dharma. So since we have the opportunity now, so we have to keep practicing. So that is now come to the last one. He said, again, Datta Katha has now not arisen in the world, and the Dharma leading to peace, Nibbana, enlightenment is not taught as programmed by a fortunate one. But a person has been reborn in a central province, and his wise, intelligent, astute, able to understand the meaning of what has been well stated and badly stated, this is the eight inopportune moment that is not the right occasion for living the spiritual life. These are the eight inopportune moments that are not right occasions for living spiritual life. So even that we reborn, you know, normal, you know, we have intelligent, but if we were born in a place that said that no Buddha and no true Dharma exist, so you have no chance, isn't it? Unless you are the Pachika Buddha, then you be able to get enlightened, because Pachika Buddha is they enlighten themselves. They are not the Savaka. They are not listening to the Buddha's teaching and practice and get enlightened. Pachika Buddha, they enlighten themselves. Usually, Pachika Buddha, they are the one like that practice and that some that have made the determination to become the Pachika Buddha, and some is a Buddha. So they have been practicing eons lifetime to become, you know, to that point. It's not that, you know. So unless you are the Pachika Buddha, then that is the only opportunity to be able to practice the Dharma. So that's why the Buddha went on to say, that is because one unique opportunities moment that is right occasions for living spiritual life. What is it? here, Tathagata has arisen in the world, and an Arahant perfectly enlightened, accomplished in the true knowledge and conduct, fortunate knower of the world, unsurpassed trainers of persons to be tamed, teachers of devas and humans, an enlightened one, a blessed one, and a Dhamma leading to peace, Nibbana, and enlightenment is taught as proclaimed by a fortunate one. And a person has been reborn in the center province, and his wise, intelligent, astute, able to understand the meaning of what has been well stated, badly stated. This, bhikkhus, is in the unique opportunity, opportune moment that is right occasion for living the spiritual life. Wow. So I think all of you here, you are in this opportune moment. You see, all of you have that intelligent, you know, healthy, relatively healthy, and you still have the true Dharma exist. So this is the golden opportunity. Please don't let it go. It's golden opportunities. So it's very rare, because sometimes we tend to take it for granted, isn't it? Even with that, you know, how many people, even the Buddha said, you know, being born as a human being is not easy. Look at us. We not only as a human being, and then we are normal, intelligent. And we here in Perth, we have the Bhikkhuni and Bhikkhu Sangha both, the four pillars. So all of us here must have done lots of good karma, lots of good deed in order to come to this point, isn't it? It's really, just reflect on that, how fortunate we are. So not to take it for granted, it's not easy we have this. We must have done lots of good karma in order to deserve that, in order to come to this point. Because the most basic Buddhist teaching, that everything, you know, happen according to causes and conditions. What we are now is come from a past deed, wholesome deed, the good things that we have done. So we reflect on that, reflect on our own goodness. That's why it's important when we read the suttas, we have this inspiration to respect ourselves, to appreciate ourselves, to be grateful that, you know, we have this opportunity to practice, to arouse the energy, to keep us going, to inspire ourselves, you know, to reflect on our own goodness. See? We all, because of our own goodness, we are here. So when I think there's one of the discourse I mentioned about the Buddhas when he was striving for his enlightenment, when he was sitting under the Bodhi trees, and then the Mara tried to come and, you know, distract him. Then the Mara tried all sorts of things. This is the last flight that this Mara tried to, you know, distract the Buddha. So he questions the Buddha. He said, "What right do you have to sit under this Bodhi tree to strive for enlightenment?" The Buddha said, "My goodness, that the goodness that I have done accumulate for all this life, that I have the right to sit here." And then he said, "The earth can be my witness." And then that time is shaken. So he said, you know, so the same thing. The fact that we all be able to sit here is our good karma bring us here. We being supported by our good karma that we are here. So it's good sometimes we read these suttas to help us to really reflect and not to take it for granted. You know, it's very, very rare. So if we miss these opportunities, then we don't know when it's going to come again. So that's why it's good when we read these suttas, it's help us, you know, inspire us to arouse the energy, to arouse, you know, to strive. Then the Buddha went on to say, having obtained the human state,
when the good Dharma has been well programmed, those who do not seize the moment have left right moment slip by. You see, let then this is how we for many inopportune times are spoken of, occasion obstructive to the path. It is only sometimes on occasion that Dhatakatas arise in the world. If one has directly encountered them, fortune rarely gained in the world. If one has obtained human state and the good karma is being taught, or a person desiring his own good, this is incentive enough to strive. You see, the Buddha said, this is enough, you know? Like now what we are at now in this pond is already this is an incentive enough to strive, you see? The reason for to strive. How can one understand the good Dharma? To that the moment won't slip by. For those who miss the moment grieve when they are reborn in hell. One here who has failed to obtain the fixed cause of good Dharma will come to regret it for a long time. Like a merchant who has missed a profit, a person hindered by ignorance who has failed in good Dharma will long experience wandering on in the round of birth and death. But those who gain the human state when the good Dharma is well programmed have accomplished the ditches work or will do so or doing so now. So we haven't do it, so we will do it. Or some already doing now. Those who have practiced the path proclaimed by Dhatakata have penetrated the right moment in the world, the unsurpassed spiritual life. You should delve without leakages, guarded, ever mindful in restraints, taught by the one with vision, the kinsman of sun. Having cut off all underlying tendencies that follow one drifting in Mala's domain, those who attain destructions of taints, though in the world, have gone beyond. So that's why, if you want to get enlightened, now this is our golden opportunity to get enlightened. So any more questions or comments? Yes? That is actually is those that already have the wisdom. Like you gain, this is how this is because the last time, you know, this is how they talk about during the Buddha's time, you know, that is that's what to say. Like they talk about sun and the moon, you know, then that is something is something is higher, you know. This is the way that, you know, someone is a higher stage in, have the vision, has the knowledge. Whenever the Buddha mentioned about the direct knowledge, it's not about the psychic power. He always mentions is about the destructions of the taints that is our craving, our defilements. That is because that is we keep coming back because of our defilements. So when someone has this knowledge, like they be able to see the past life, you know, the three knowledge they say, and then they have this psychic power. Actually, that is still mundane. You're still not enlightened. That's why even some monks, because of they have psychic power and people pray and worship them very much, and because of the fame and then the downfall of that. And I think that all of you know Devadatta is the one that is, he's got the fame, he's got the psychic power, and he thinks that he's better than the Buddha. Because of the fame, he still go down.
So it's only the destruction of all taints of defilements. They say if you know whether someone is enlightened or not, you try to make that person angry, see whether the person is angry or not. If the person is angry, that means he's still not enlightened. You still have anger. So just every very simple, whether we know the person enlightened or not, you make the person angry. If they're angry, then you know the person is not enlightened. Yeah.
Uh-huh. How would you define the hell? Because I think it's different to ours.
Yeah, the hell, because they said in hell, like, you know, they said you'll be lots of suffering, you know, according to the suttas, you know, according what the Buddha describes, you know, lots of suffering, you've been tortured. But of course, sometimes we can say that we are in hell if we hold on to our past, the emotions, what happened to us, and the anger, we got upset, then we are in hell too. You know, this moment even, you know, if you're whole, we have lots of anger, we're so upset, we torture, we've been tortured ourselves. If it's actually the same thing, if someone couldn't let that go and they live in lots of suffering and a lot of anger, and they've been tortured, isn't it? And if someone has lots of suffering, mental suffering, it's very difficult to practice as well. Even now, if this moment, if people have lots of suffering, isn't it? Whatever you said also is quite difficult to go in because they're overcome by that sufferings, you know, a lot of mental suffering, torture, a lot of pain in life, anger in them. So it's very difficult. Yeah, with the Buddhism, like it's because the Buddha said our mind is a fourth runner. We create our world. You know, if you have a beautiful heart, our world is beautiful. If our heart full with anger, you know, then we are in hell. So yeah, it's a Christian, like for example, like. It's different, like for people think that happiness is a destination, like there is a place there. You arrive there. But happiness is not a place, a destination. Happiness is a journey, is a process. Because everything is just arising, passing away. There is no something that is stagnant there, you know. You reach the place, because I know according to Christianity, they said that is a place that stagnant forever. Then you're happy ever after. But the Buddha's teaching that of non-self, there's no eternal. You see, everything arising, passing away. Even the happiness is come and go. It's not something stagnant, something permanent, solid, stay, no changing. If that means the Buddha's teaching of non-self, impermanent is not the truth. Because the Buddha's teaching the Dhamma that everything is just forever changing. It's not stagnant, yes?
Saying the answer for her is this. Heaven and the hell is what we experience in our life when we're really angry and agitated. Yeah. And so there is another place that after we die, we are going to another world, like it's another...
The world is also like, it's just the mind.
It's not another... Place as heaven, that or hell means it is another place that because we sometimes think it is heaven and the hell is the way we just day to day life.
Because we think that, and a lot of people think that that
there's something
is on top
up there.
It's underneath.
Yeah, it's not.
Actually, it's just like you. Like for example, like if some people be able to see the other realm of being, they're just anywhere within us. It's because our we can't see through our visible our eyes, we can't see them, but they may be just anywhere around us. There is no like top or bottom or you know. It's just like you know, just a in a different dimension. It's not something that is a place is there, you know what I mean? That see, it's because the consciousness of mind, like for example, because those spirit realms, they are, the mind create body. You know, the consciousness is there, that they create the body. So it's very fine they create the body, but they don't have the body like this. So the hell is also the same. They create, the mind create the body.
Thank you.
Because the mind, the Buddha said mind is the fourth runner. You know, so this is, that's why sometimes we don't have to wait till we die, we experience hell. We can experience how is it like now if you have lots of anger. So any more? Questions or comments? So, I think that's it. You can, I think we finish. Is it no questions, isn't it? Okay.